Blog Talk Good evening. Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Enlightening Your Way. I am your host, Nancy Lombardo. We are airing live simultaneously on Lily Dell Blog Radio Show, and of course here on the Lily Dell Assembly official Facebook page. I am a year-round resident here at Lily Dell and the president of the Church of Living Spirit, which is an independent spiritualist church here on the grounds of Lily Dell. I'm a military veteran, a retired police detective, fitness and yoga instructor, and wellness is my passion. My show is a combination of many life experiences that will feature various topics and guests to help enrich one's mind, body, and soul on your pathway to healthy living. My Facebook page is Wellness with Nancy Lombardo, and my motto is protecting and serving your well-being. And I'm so excited to introduce our guest this evening. Christine Wicker is the author of 8 books, including Lily Dell, The True Story of the Town That Speaks to the Dead, a New York Times bestseller. Christine visited Lily Dell as a religion reporter for the Dallas Morning News. Christine has won numerous awards for her journalism and lives in Dallas and is the director of development for a nonprofit mental health and drug treatment facility that serves the homeless and indigent people. Christine and her family still visit Lily Dell, and you are talking and live here from Dallas, yes? Hi, Christine. Welcome. Thank you so very much for joining me. I'm so excited to have you here. So I got a whole slew of questions to ask you, and I hope you don't mind. But I was just asking, I was just telling you, you didn't make it to Lily Dell this past summer, and I think it's been a couple summers ago since you were here.
I think it might have been 2 summers, 2 or 3.
Yeah. I remember. But that's how we first met, and it was lovely to meet you. So the first thing I was really curious about is I was wondering if you've always been interested in writing.
Yes, I have to say there was a lady, we called her a lady poetess, in Somerville, South Carolina. We were there when I was about 11 years old, and she was convinced that I was going to be a writer. And she showed her some of my stories, and just took. She had so much faith in me that I always wanted to be a writer. I didn't always want to be a journalist. I didn't even think of that, but I was in college, and I was an English major, and I thought, how am I going to make a living?
Right.
One day I went in to register for a semester, and there was no line at the journalism table, so I went over, and I said, do you think I could do this? And I said, yes, you want to.
What was your first job right after college?
My first job was on a little newspaper. I was a reporter for a little daily in Arlington, Texas. I went to school at the University of Texas, Arlington, and that little paper was my first job, and it was really hard because you had to produce a story a day, because you came out only like three reporters. So you had to produce it. And so one day I made a mistake, and it, of course, was on the front page because everything was on the front page. And I was so upset about it that I called the journalism director crying, and I said, this is terrible. This is terrible. I can't do this anymore. I made mistakes. I can't type because it's true. I was a terrible typist. And I don't know my directions. And I forget things. I just can't do things anymore. She had this habit. She thought, Just keep going.
And learn.
Yeah, that's about, 80% of the battle.
Right. Yeah.
So that was that. And then, I read about Lily Dell in the New York Times.
Before we get there, I wanted to ask you something else, if you don't mind. Because I was very interested because I was reading about you too, and I told you I don't read a lot of books, but I did read your book of Lily Dell, but I was very curious to see that your first book was called The Eyeball Killer. You wrote with Dallas police officer John Matthews, it said, about a serial killer of prostitutes, and that really sparked my interest. You may or may not know, but when I was a police officer in Lawton, Oklahoma, we had a serial killer that killed prostitutes also that never got solved. So I was so pleased to know that they resolved this and that they came, you know, they solved it and that you wrote a story about it, because sometimes these women are the forgotten women, for sure. And I was pleased to see that you brought light to that, of the horrible killings that they had.
The police officer who put together a book, and my agent called me and said, would you help me, would you write this book with him? And it was beat cop. He was a beat cop, and he had a woman partner, and they were just on the street talking to prostitutes. And the guy who did it was someone no one suspected, beloved in the community, and at least he was convicted of it.
Yeah. So were you doing your journalism and just started writing books in between all that?
I did. And that was my second book. My first book was, my first book was about religion. And my second book was, the one with John Matthews. And they published it. It was a paperback, and, you know, it was red and yellow and eyeball killer.
Yeah. I have to have the title.
Yeah, and I was about to take a job with this new section that they were going to put out for religion. And so I went into the managing editor and I said, I have a chance to do this book, and what do you think? He looked at it, and I said, you know, because I know that you want me to have some credibility as a religion reporter, and this isn't exactly what we do. And he just looked at me and laughed, and he said, who do you think reads those books? The Baptists.
That's pretty good. I noticed when you had talked to the church, you clarified that many people would call you religious reporter instead of religion reporter. Why did you like to clarify that?
Well, religion reporter, people would also buy me, and my family, they would buy me crosses. Well, not understanding that as a religion reporter, you couldn't go into the synagogue wearing a cross. You just couldn't wear crosses.
Right, right.
So it was a misunderstanding. If you're the religious reporter, then you write about non-religious stuff, I guess. If you're the religion reporter, you just cover religion. So a huge difference. But they would put this in one of my books. Knowing that I was a religion reporter made the other people around me, the other journalists who were notoriously profane and drunken, really nervous. And I have to say, I'm the same person I always was. I'm not the religious reporter. I'm the religion reporter. And let me see how I could tell this. One time, I'm on the phone, and one of the most profane of the reporters is cursing about something. And I get off, and I look at him, and I say, look, I'm on the phone with ministers, and I really wish that you would not do that. The famous lesson of McGonagall. I said, McGonagall, could you just tone it down? And he said, oh, Christine, why don't you just say, McGonagall, shut the F up.
Well, I mean, going from your Arlington small paper to the Dallas Morning News was big. Dallas Morning News is a big, big paper.
It was a really big paper.
Yeah, I was familiar with it living in Oklahoma for sure. Yeah we get it.
In those days, I had a lot of money, and so it was really fun, and I considered myself very lucky. In fact, it was so unlikely that I would make that kind of jump that for years I would answer the phone, this is Christine Wicker with the Dallas Morning News. Ain't that something? I wouldn't say that, but I'd always think, ain't that something?
It is something. It's really something, for sure. Yeah, totally. So how did you first hear about Lilydale?
I was a religion reporter, and I saw a piece in the Times, and it was written, it was a really good piece about Lilydale, and I thought, this is so unusual. And what I really thought about it, though, is that underneath it was something that journalists often do. which is, you know, just a little bit sly. It's a little arch. It's not exactly making fun, but it's taking, you know, little ways that you question the press's credibility. And I understood that because, you know, journalists are supposed to be impartial, and what that means can be different.
Absolutely.
But what I didn't like about it is I felt like you wouldn't do that to the Methodists. You wouldn't do that to the Baptists. You do that to them because you can and because they're not a big church. And I didn't think that was how you ought to cover religion.
Well, I know being in Oklahoma for 35 years and you in Texas, that spiritualism, I mean, it's not a well-known thing in the South for sure. So it was probably a big deal. And I'm thinking, I know you were the granddaughter of a Baptist preacher, and I was wondering how this affected your thoughts coming into Lilydale originally, of a town that talked to the dead.
Well, I was utterly charmed by Lilydale.
I love
it
that.
It was just so beautiful. And but I came, let's see. Okay, when I came for the Dallas Morning News, I had some people who kind of smoothed my way with the Dallas Morning News behind me. It worked out well. And I just really loved it. It was beautiful. It was in the summer. And I was totally, you know, they talked about how even the squirrels were friendly and they would come and sit behind the kitchen and hold their little paws out to get something. And it was just all like stepping into this magical place. So I thought, this would be a great story. And, you know, and as for my own belief, really it didn't matter. I was just doing a story, and it was just like any other story. Like, you know, when I covered the Hare Krishnas. I don't know if you remember the Hare Krishnas.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, totally.
They were really looked down on. But, you know, I just was there to cover them, not make a judgment about them. When I did the book was when it became more difficult, because I had to decide, because I knew that what I wrote would reflect on me. I had to do something more personal. And while I was like, there were times when it seemed so real to me that I thought, oh gosh, if I put this out there, the journalists are just going to say, she's become a nut. And what will I do? You know, will I become a New Age writer? Unlikely.
Right.
I could do that. So it began, you know, it was sort of like, how far do I want to go with this? And at the same time, I began to, I felt like there was something here. And you know, in the Baptist, of course, they believe that there's life after death. So I could just look at it and I could say, here are some people who are trying to show that that is the case. There's
right, yeah.
Evidence.
The continuity,
what
yeah.
What is the problem with that? Well, you know, you have the debunkers, and journalists are more comfortable being a debunker than not. So, you know, so there was that. How much did I really want to believe? And there were, I think I probably said this in the church service, and that there would be times, though, when things would happen that were so stunning to me and seemed so real that it was like my world just shook. I was like, if this is true, then nothing. Then what else is true? You know, it was like the ground under my feet moved, and I would just be really kind of in a tizzy about it. Oh, my gosh, this, there could be something really here. And then something would happen that I would think, okay, it's not real. And Shelley Takei, who befriended me when I did the book, he called it the Lilydale Bounce. That's just what happened. But you know what I realized was that a lot of things happen to us, and they happen to a lot of people, but we discount them so quickly.
Yeah.
That we almost don't know they have.
That's a good way of putting it. You're right. They discount it very quickly.
You go, and at one point I said to my sister, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen? I'm starting to really believe this. And she was like, give it 6 weeks. You never believe anything so long. You'll be back to not knowing. So, there was a way in which not knowing, I was more comfortable.
Sometimes I think the not knowing is what really brings people here to Lilydale, because they want to know, that curiosity and that wanting to believe. And like you said, there's those moments of wow that really catch you.
I watched my mother, though. We were in one circle. My uncle had died. And I tell this story in the book. And Gretchen was the medium. I went to
Gretchen meet. Clark, yes.
And she said she had someone with one there named John, and he died. She got this feeling that he died, something in his chest, whatever, and he died, had a heart, open heart surgery, and died of that, and she got something else right. And, but I went away like, well, John is a common name. His name is Johnny. And nobody called him John. So I was like, nobody called him John. And men die of heart attacks all the time. And something else he got right. And I went back and I was talking to this friend of mine who was Jewish and very analytical. And I thought he'd be the first scoffer. Instead, he looked at me and he laughed and he said, she got his name right. Oh, no. What she got right is she said, I see something happened at the funeral. And it was a big to-do. Something. I don't know what it was. Was there a fight at the funeral? Yeah, there was a fight between me and my cousin in the street.
Half
of the family left.
That's not something that you just make up. Where would that come from?
He said, you got the name right. You got how he died. You got the thing. You got one other thing. She said he wants you to know he was really tickled. By that, well, tickled would have been what he said. That's his kind of language. And the really incredible thing was when we got to the funeral and half the family had taken off, and we're looking at this picture, and I always thought he looked kind of grim, and I looked at that picture, and it looked like he was amused. And I looked at my mother, and I said, does he look like he's about to laugh? She said, he does. And I looked at his daughter, and I said, what do you think about that picture? And she said, looks like he's about to laugh. And he would have thought this was the most hilarious thing ever. And so my friend said, she got four things right, and you don't believe her?
Right.
What would it take?
I like that.
What would you want?
I had mentioned in church this morning that you were going to be on the show tonight, and I had talked about the fact that this had come out so long ago, back in 9/11 when 9/11 happened. But there's still many people in your book that are still here in Lilydale, and that's way cool for people that read the book that could come here and still meet some of the mediums that are still on the grounds and some of the people that you talk to that are still here. I know that you were the very first person, I believe, to write a book about Lilydale. And at the time, I think they said Lilydale was a little hesitant because they were having some problems with journalists. How did you manage to get your foot in the door to allow them to let you write this book?
Oh, boy, that was not easy. What happened was I always wanted to write about Lilydale, and we moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And so I got out the map and I saw how far it was, and I thought, I don't have any money, but I could drive. And I got here, and it wasn't expensive to stay, so that was really good. But I came in the spring, and it was still really cold, and everything was shut up, and almost nobody would talk to me. And I put this in the book, too. I made friends with the guy who was running the restaurant.
Yeah.
And he kind of liked me. He would talk to me, but other people just wouldn't. Nobody would talk to me. And I didn't know what I was going to do. And yeah, because, they were used to being made fun of. And when you let somebody do a book, you really don't know what they're going to do. So I could see why they felt that way, but I think nobody would talk to me, so it was really bad. And so I talked to somebody who was really rude to me. Murray was the guy going from the restaurant. And he, I saw him on the street and I said, boy, you know, this is just not going well. He said, you see that house up there? The one that's kind of a purple color. I said, yeah, there's two sisters right there. One is brilliant and one is really rich. Go up there and knock on the door. So I did. And Frank Takei came to the door and invited me in. And Shelley came out and she had this flowering of something on. And she said, hello, darling. And then she just took me. She told me stories. She had a psychomanium in her basement. And then she took me all over the
place. I love Shelley, and she's so welcoming, and she does that to so many people that still come into Lilybell. She takes them all around and introduces them to everybody. You know, she's one of our biggest ambassadors here in Lilybell, and I just love her. So that's great that she took you to, that was the right person to take you under your wings and show you, yes.
She believed that she didn't believe. She was, you know, she was kind of in that same space. So yeah, she was perfect, and she knew all the stories, and she introduced me, and that's
I didn't know her house used to be purple. I just know it as the Angel House, and it's all white now. So I saw that in your book. You said that.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think it was.
Yeah. I thought it was funny in your book. I had to laugh about, I think it was before when you came the first time with the news, that you said that you had stayed somewhere that they didn't have the air conditioning. Coming from Texas and Oklahoma, you know, we have air conditioning everywhere. We don't get there, and you couldn't sleep, and you ended up getting up and just walking around and exploring.
It's where the church is held.
At the assembly. Oh, you're up.
And they had these little, single beds, and I pulled the mattress out. It's so hot. I pulled it outside onto the
that's funny.
Terrace, and the balcony, and it started to rain. My first night was pretty miserable.
Well, you'll be happy to know we have air conditioners in those rooms now, so you'll be happy to know that. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
So what was your first impression of Lilybell overall?
Really
magic. Oh, I love that.
Total place that has that look. It has been so preserved and I'm really impressed. Oh, and the women at that day and time, they would walk around with these gowns, you know.
Victorian, yeah.
Yeah, and so they just would go through the town, and it just seemed lavish and lovely. And they would say, I loved too that they would say, you can do this. Anybody can do this. And it was like that largeness of spirit. You know, you could go to the circles and they were free, and you could practice. And they never acted like special. And at one then I may have said this story before, when I was in Wisconsin, I did this book reading, and there was a psychiatrist and his wife, who's also a therapist there, and I was talking to them, and I said, well, I'm just so amazed at it's the generosity of the way they just say, well, you can do this. Everybody has the ability to do this. And he said, well, that's because it's run by women. He's a man. First thing he does when he learns the smallest thing is start trying to elevate himself as a great teacher.
Well, I know Patricia Price was one of the ones in your book, and that's one of her favorite sayings of all time is that we are all mediums. And I always tell people, you were all mediums. It's just a matter of whether you choose to develop that part of you or not develop that part of you. So
I went to her house. It was one of the first circles that I was ever in.
Yep, she's been doing it a long time.
And, you know, I love the pet cemetery and just the sense of history there.
When you were here 2 years ago, had our roads been paved?
No.
Oh, well, now you definitely need to come back because our roads are all paved. They kept them still smaller. you know, to keep the integrity of the horse and buggy feel of it. But they're all paved and they're beautiful. They're just beautiful. It really was the perfect and what exactly we needed. So it was really, really nice.
Yeah, in the light. And it was just this sheltered place that it just seemed to me it was such a special place, and I thought people would want to know that. When I went to one of the vocal readings, there was this car that came in, and it almost hit me, and it swerved around, and this woman got out, and she had on the boots going down. I went, that's one of my readers. And she was.
They love to wear the Victorian gowns, that's for sure. So the three people that you featured in your book, was that a planned thing, or was that people that you came up with when you got here?
Oh, that came, that came really at the end of the book. I had written the book, and I sent it to my editor, and she said, you know what you need is you need some people to take you through the book. It needs something else. And it did. She was so right. That was perfect. So I went back to Shelley and I was like, Shelley, what am I going to do? How am I going to find these people? Because I hadn't really, I had interviewed lots of people, but I hadn't turned up just so many those people.
Yeah, they had incredible stories, I thought.
They did.
Did any of them ever keep in contact with you or follow back up with you after?
Lauren and I did see Lauren. She wasn't really one of the people there, was she? She wasn't one of the three. Oh, yeah,
no.
She was. I did tell stories about Lauren, about how the coffin and the girl.
Yes.
I knew Lauren pretty well, and I kept up with her, and she came with me. I met some people when I lived in California. I lived in Pasadena. And they wanted to do a film, a documentary on Lily Bell. And so Lauren helped me, and they came, and nothing really came of it. I couldn't sell it.
Mm-hmm. So I know you did a circle of your own when you were here, and that was over at Fellowships with Elaine Thomas, I believe. How was your experience with that? You were talking about you didn't think you could do it. You were skeptical. They put you in a circle and do a reading.
But what I started to realize is that I couldn't just report this story, that I would have to really do more than that. I needed to get inside people. I couldn't get inside people. They tell you what they think, but you don't know, really. What are they doing? And I began to see also that a lot of people will look at Lily Bell, they say, these movies make money and this is a business and everything. But I began to realize how much nerve it took to get up there and before a crowd of people say that you're going to find something to say about them.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's incredible. I would never do that. Who would want to do that? And who would risk their reputation? Who would, I mean, you know, these were people, you know, engineers, they were teachers, they were police officers, they were people, you know, not just airy, fairy people who lived their whole life in some strange way.
Oh, many professionals, many professionals,
yes. Yeah, and so I thought, well, there's only one way for me to figure this out. And that is to walk into it as far as I can get into it. And it was stunning, the things that I learned. And Elaine said something that has stuck with me for a long time. I said through most of it scoffing. I was mostly going, I don't know if I believe that. That's just kind of how I go through life. But she said, what was it? Take the best and leave the rest.
I like that.
And I thought, well, yeah, that's the name of the year. You know, sure, you want to be that. But I found it to be a really good little guide for life because you can go through life all the time looking at what didn't work. And then you asked me about the class, and I'm kind of getting off on it. But what I also messages are for that person. They're not for the people around. So if that person hears, you know, they always say the medium's message, I have an older woman here and she has flowers and tells you she loves you. Well, you can make fun of that if you want it, but if that person feels and takes that message, well,
exactly.
And then it served its purpose.
Absolutely. And if it if it gave a sense of healing, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. And so we would do these various exercises. It was really fun. It was fun to do it. And it was brave of her to let me do it. I didn't at that time realize how brave it was to let a journalist into your life. I was never really afraid of him. But she did. And
she believed in you. She believed in you.
She must have. I guess she did.
Mm-hmm.
And she just let me come in and pay for it. And I came back for a couple of weekends. And I was stunned by the messages I gave. Now, I have to tell you that just as I would start to think I was big stuff, I'd give a message and the person would go, that's nothing. So I never. Oh, and then here's another thing she said. She said, well, practice it. And I still do this thing. She said, practice when you're going to meet somebody, imagine how they're going to look. And that will extend your intuition or your, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I still do that.
I love that.
And in fact, I really try hard to imagine exactly how they're going to look. And I get so convinced that I'm right that when they turn up and they don't look anything like that, I'm almost like, that's not you.
It's one thing, but it's one thing you'll always hear when you're, especially when you're in training, they always say, practice, practice, practice. You cannot get enough practice. Practice, practice, practice. So that was very good advice for sure.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things that I still think about. And also, she changed how I, the weirdest thing, and you would know about this more than I do, was you began to question where your thoughts came from.
No, of course, yes. Yeah.
You know, you just really hadn't thought much about my thoughts.
Well, you're just like, did I make that up? Was that really coming from? Yeah. I mean, I think that's just a natural response.
Yeah. And you would, and you know, she would talk about how they would come from maybe these different directions. And I began to really look at my thoughts and I realized, we don't really know where they come from.
Until. Until you can, that's why we have the evidence to prove where it comes from. That's all part of it. And I think that's what makes the difference of it all.
Well, and you know, I will say this about my feeling about death now. I think has been very much changed by my experiences and my family's experiences. In Lilydale, I mean, things have just happened that they said were going to happen. People have said things. There have been lots of things that to other people might not sound like much, but to me have been stunning. And I watched my mother do this. My uncle had died in a heart surgery. They said, you know, no way he's going to die. And when he did, the guy came in and said it was just like he rushed off. And she gets this message. And it says, someone is here, a man, and he wants you to know that he didn't really want to die. Things just went too far, and then he couldn't get back. And my mother was like, I never got a message.
Oh.
What? What else could that have been?
I love that. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, but you just don't know. But, yeah, that how it's been really good. How I feel about death now, I was thinking about it because I knew I was going to talk to you, is I do feel that people are around, that spirits are around. And I'm not as afraid of grief by this.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it can still really hit me.
Of course.
But I think that I think the spirits are around, and I think I don't know where they go. I don't know anything but I do think that something else is going on. I don't think now that people can trust.
So would you say that there was any person or thing that had a profound effect on you after you completed your book and left Lilydale?
Oh, the most stunning thing was that people would to me, you, I don't believe it. They would be nice and they would say, you know, I would if anything had ever happened to me, but nothing ever happened. So I'm open to it, but it never has. My favorite one is the woman who I lived in a suburb of Milwaukee, and she made these bread cakes, and she invited me over one day to have a cake, piece of cake that's on her husband. And she said that I would, that nothing could have happened, and her husband looked at her and said, what about the dog? And she said, oh, the dog. My spirit is the dog. My mother's spirit is in the dog. And you forgot that? Nothing ever happened to you. And again, people would say, this is what we were talking about. It happens to them. They know it happens to them, but they don't feel the import of it. You must see that too.
Yes.
And I don't know what that is. I think it's that we...
Sometimes I think it's a little scary.
It's scary.
Sometimes I think it's scary to people, and I think it's important to get people to just understand this, especially if we have spiritualists as part of our religion and truly believe in this, and to put, you know, to just be all in and just truly believe in the continuity of life. And we prove that on a daily basis, the continuity of life. And not only that, the healing process of it all, because it is a beautiful healing process, I believe.
And, you know, there really aren't very many other religions that take such a step.
No, I don't think there's, yes.
No, I mean, yes. They don't. They don't say, hey, I'm going to put my faith out here. I'm going to let you judge me. I'm going to let you judge what I say. I believe it that much.
So why do you believe so many people were interested in your book, that it became such a good seller?
No, I think it's Lilydale. I think Lilydale is just fascinating.
I think it goes back to what we were saying, that people want desperately to believe.
I think they do. Now, some people were really disappointed because I didn't come out totally believing. But I have to say that the more I've talked to people, the more I think it happens to everybody. And they just don't.
I think it's okay that you came in non-biased. And, you know, whether you, I know some people always feel skeptical. Well, I don't think you were skeptical. I think you still were questioning because, you know, you even said when you came back a couple of years ago, you had a beautiful experience here with your sister, a beautiful experience. So it's not something that you can just instantly say, okay, I believe in this now. I think it's gradual. And
yeah. And it's
kind
of, it's a huge change, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, to embrace that is healing and comforting, but you're doing something that most people don't do. You've allowed something to rock your world, and most of us just go, oops, okay, I'll forget that. So I see people in Lilydale as really very brave. One of the mediums said, well, this is my truth. I tell my truth. And I'd never heard that phrase before.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, yeah, how often do we tell our truth? And, you know, I never go to Lilydale with something.
Right.
Yeah, and for my sister and my family, there's just been lots of things. And my sister is pretty hard-headed, but she really feels it. I think she's got the gift much more than I do.
Maybe she's willing to explore it more.
Yeah.
Well, I do believe since the pandemic, you know, we have definitely seen an uptick of visitors here, especially younger visitors. People are curious. I think they're wanting to believe. I think, you know, we saw so much death during the pandemic and so much loss and so much grief that people are searching. And I'm very happy to be part of a community that knows the continuity of life and can offer healing to those that are in that kind of distress or just that need and that want. And I think mm-hmm. it's a beautiful thing.
You know, Ann Gaiman is one of those.
I love Ann Gaiman, yes.
Yes, when I went for her lessons that she gave, and I saw her give amazing messages. You know, the other thing I loved about Lily Bell is it's so disorganized. And people say to me, oh, you know, they get your name, they know you're coming, and they research you, and that's how they get on.
No.
They don't do that.
No, don't have time to do that.
Machine that works like that.
Yeah, no, I know people probably think that, but yeah, no, that's not what happened.
Oh.
No. So I had one of the girls that's reading your book wanted me to ask this question. Have you ever thought about doing a part two or a second part, another book about Lily Bell?
People have asked me to. I don't know what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I would do. I couldn't do the same thing again. I played with the idea of doing something that's fictional. Because there's so many fun things.
Like, right.
What do they call them? The walk-on? Or the walk-in?
Yes. Walk-ons.
Walk-ins.
Yeah.
There's just so many fun things that you could do if you were doing fiction. So I thought about doing a fiction book about a journalist who comes in
Well, I really appreciated you writing a true story. I appreciated the detail you put into your book. And I liked that you brought, you know, you talked to so many people, and I thought you did bring a good light to what we are, to who we represent, to what we continue to be 145 years later. How many communities can say that, you know?
No, they can't. And I just think there's a spirit there, an openness that I think the world really needed then and really needs now.
Yeah.
Kind of live and let live, and it's just wonderful to see. You know, because most of the time it seems like when people have a belief, especially now, they seem to be just really intent on that belief and pugnacious about it and ready to fight over it and the whole spirit of Lily Bell is just not within it all.
We're a people of peace for sure, and I think it's okay that you just can agree to disagree.
Yes. You know, you asked me, I don't think I answered it very well. What has happened that's changed through the years is that now I see, I won't say visitations, but, you know, if you have a dream or a feeling, I have a feeling that somebody's here, I see it as more commonplace.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
More, this is how life really is. And, you know, what they also talk about is fascinating to me is how even as a baby, you're learning what to see and what not to see.
Right.
You probably talk about that a lot. And that really spoke to me because I realized that there's too much what you're going to see.
What?
If the baby sees something and nobody else sees it.
Right.
Maybe they stop seeing it.
It sounds to me like you learn to trust your intuition too. And
yes, although that scares me because you know how all those stories were really scary. Vivid stories about how you had this feeling and so you didn't go that way. And then I'm going to go this way and then I decide to go this way. And I think, well, maybe I should have gone that way because what is my real feeling?
Right. Don't overthink.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that's all the questions I had for you. Is there anything else you think you might want to add or say or that I didn't maybe touch base on?
Well, I guess I would just say how I know there are a lot of, you know, there's a lot of suffering in the world, and it's And it's wonderful that the people who live in Lilydale love Lilydale, and the people who come there love it so much and think of it as such a precious place and have kept it pretty pure in what it does. And it's, what I would want to say is the lovely thing about Lilydale is they're doing something. They made a claim, a big claim. And they believe it, and they live according to it. But there's also this humility there that you often don't see. And I think that those things are just really, they speak to the idea that spirit moves through.
Mm-hmm. I love that. One of our, Barbara Sanson, one of our registered mediums, talked in church this morning. That was actually one of the things she kind of touched base on, about to be humble, you know, and it's not about us or what we do. It's doing it with love. It's doing it with healing. And it's being humble about it. So yeah, I like that you said that.
And you know, I can't say too much about this, but I've been reading about some of the religions, Muslim, Christian, and I really think that Lilydale is in that position. You're going into this well, into this connection with spirit that, as you say, is available to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to go there. You have to listen. You have to be willing to do it. It's an interesting thing. It's always there. And what these mystics are saying about God is right there in you. You don't have to reach for God.
Yeah, God's everywhere. Absolutely.
And so I think that's lovely and a model for other people, and it's too bad that they don't embrace it.
Well, let's hope they do. And I so appreciate you coming on tonight and talking to us about your book and talking to me. And I would ask anybody listening or tonight, if they have any questions, to put it in the comments, and we'll get back with you and read the comments. I think that's all I have to say. So I thank you so very much for joining me this evening.
Thank you
for having me. Well, it's been so fun.
To talk about Lilydale anymore.
No, and I love
it. August named Lily, but I did not. People think I named her after Lilydale, but there's a little synchronicity.
There you go. Yeah, I love that word. I love that synchronicity.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Christine, so very much. And thank you all for joining us this evening. Join me again in 2 weeks for another episode of Enlightening Your Way, where my goal is to help enrich your mind, body, and soul on your pathway to healthy living. Please come back and visit this page often. It has everything that's going on here at Lilydale. This is our official page. The Lilydale Assembly, Inc. is the official Facebook page. Also, please like my Facebook page, Wellness with Nancy Lombardo, on Instagram, nancy.k.lombardo. My name is Nancy Lombardo. I am protecting and serving your well-being. Good evening, everybody. Thank you.